Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Hello, Dr. Trisha. Welcome to another episode of Life and Love in the Q.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be back. I feel like it's just been a while. I know it hasn't, but it feels like it to me.
Yeah. And today we're going in for the deep dive. So I hope you brought a wetsuit.
I brought a wetsuit and Kleenexes and all the emotions because I think they're going to be here today.
Fabulous. Well, so today we're talking about privilege. And I think this is an important discussion, one that we're hearing a lot in different headlines. It's a very triggering word for a lot of people because for a lot of people, it doesn't feel good to acknowledge the privileges they have because life is still hard. It's like, it's still hard. And I have all these privileges too.
Yeah. And not just like the privileges that I have, but the privileges that I've taken for granted through the years and the potential harm that I created because of that. So that's like on my mind, even a little this past couple of months.
Yeah. Well, so I know you have a story that you wanted to start out with though, and I love your story. So take it away, doc.
I do, because I went to a yoga class the other day and it was a high heat, high intensity yoga class. But because of the way that the yoga class was explained on the website of the place that I went, there were a couple of people that came that were unprepared for that yoga class to be what it was. And I was so impressed with the teacher as they walked into the studio, because she explained that she asked them a little bit about what their experience was with yoga. And the people responded telling the teacher that they had a lot of experience with yoga, but they had never been to a really hot yoga type of a class. And she said, well, what are you looking for specifically today? And the woman that was in the group said that she had hurt her back and she was looking to get a good stretch in her lower back. And then the gentleman that was with her had hurt his shoulder. And so they were actually both coming to this yoga class to deal with some injuries that they had. And the teacher said, this is probably not the best class for you, because yoga is always about stretching, but this is a high intensity, high heat class. We're going to work hard. We're going to do arm balances. And so they had a few complaints. They felt frustrated that they'd come all the way down. But in the end, it was really just best if they left and came back. And as I was listening to the interchange, I was just thinking that that's one of the things that's so interesting to me about yoga is you can talk to some people who are yoga purists. And they don't believe in the high heat rooms. They don't believe in the high intensity classes. But then you can talk to somebody like me who's been practicing for a long time, but I love the high heat and I love the classes that have a little bit more upbeat music and I love power classes. But there's a class for everybody in yoga, but sometimes you have to be able to look for it. But the very best studio will have, you know, class offerings that will appeal to everybody. And as I sat there in the yoga class and just kind of really appreciated that there's been different times in my life where I've needed different yoga. And I think many people are like that. But if we only have places that teach high intensity, high heat, then we miss a huge portion of people who could really do wonders with meditative yoga or gentle yoga or yin yoga. Like there's the reason we have so many varieties is not because we're trying to force everybody to do things one way in yoga. We're meeting people where they are and offering a wide variety of classes, if that makes sense. And I feel like the reason I love that from just a yoga perspective is there is something beautiful about that mindfulness and that meditation and that peace that you get in a yoga class that so many people, I know so many people who are looking for that, but purposely avoid yoga because they think they have to be this pretzel-shaped hero, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just really led me to think a lot about the word privilege, because it's not, like I said, yoga isn't only for flexible people. It's for, I honestly think everybody in the world would benefit from some sort of yoga practice, even if it's just stretching at night, legs up the wall. But so many people avoid it because they don't feel like they have access to it at their level, at their needs. And I don't know, maybe it doesn't really make as much sense as I speak it, as it thought in my mind, but it's, I feel like it's just such a great example of just the concept of privilege. It's not just about the flexible body. It's about offering people what they need to be able to be healthy, to be able to be strong, to be able to live out life according to their values, not some pre-subscribed or pre-prescribed value system or belief system.
Well, as you were telling this, it reminded me of the Einstein quote where he said, everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it lives its whole life believing it's stupid. And that's kind of the idea of like, everyone can be good at yoga, but did you find the right type? Everyone can be a genius in the classroom, but are you in the right type of learning environment? And I think my family found this in the homeschooling environment where different kids really could thrive, but it only depended on if they were in the right type of learning setting for them. And so for me, as that perfectionist type A student who really thrived in a traditional classroom, I never thought of that as like, that really was a privilege for me, that I was placed, that the most common type of educational setting is the one that I thrive in best.
Yeah.
But really, that it's just, it gave me a leg up that other equally intelligent kids who learn in very different ways didn't have that benefit. So I think that's a great story to start with, because that's an example of privilege in my life that had not even crossed my mind.
I actually appreciate that you say that about homeschooling, because you're right. That is another great example where privilege comes in. And as Memorial Day was just yesterday, and I was talking to a couple of my kids about, and it's actually one of the things I'm a little bit sensitive about right now, to be honest, that I was talking to my kids about some of the ways that we raised them, and we were raising them according to this, you know, this religious narrative. My daughter was giving me the example that she used to come from, she went to early morning seminary, and then she went to band practice in the morning, and then she had school all day, and then she had swim practice until like 7 o'clock at night. And then she was expected to go to the church for youth night on Wednesdays and be there at seven. But the only way that she could really pull it off was very often to be in her, you know, short little Nike shorts coming from swimming. She had wet hair. She was a mess and often exhausted after a very long day. And multiple times she got in trouble by the church leaders for having short shorts on. And we were talking about it, and she said, I was set up to lose. I was set up to fail at the church level because I didn't have enough time to get from swim practice to the church with a shower in between. But I got in trouble if I came in short shorts and a tank top straight from swim practice. And so she's like, it was like this no-win situation. But the people who were really giving her all of this pressure, same thing. They were coming at it from this privileged lens of, well, everybody has time to go home and shower. And if you don't have time, and if you love
your priorities are off.
Your priorities are off. Yes. Right. And so I think that there's, you know, it's funny because we're going to talk about some of the big ones in a minute, but I really wanted to, I'm grateful for the homeschool and the example of the yoga, my daughter, because we do spew privilege in big ways, but we also on a very, very consistent basis spew privilege in small microaggressions every single day. Anytime we make a judgment on somebody else's lived experience, we're spewing some level of privilege. I believe that coming up with a place where we can really have a lot of compassion and empathy for shared life experiences requires that we check our privilege, every single one of us, because every one of us has some degree of privilege.
Yes. I love the fact that you said microaggressions. I hope we go into that more, because I think that's something that I have noticed more since I've come out in my life. That's helped give me more perspective of like, well, what is privilege? It's not, I think a lot of the narrative that we hear nowadays is it's, well, it's making white men and some white women feel bad about themselves so that other people feel better. Or we're giving unfair advantages to minority groups because they need an extra leg up, you know, whereas, and again, I'm sharing the narrative that I was kind of raised in and surrounded in a very white homogenous community. That's yeah. Like, well, we are working hard and that's why we have what we have. And if you just work hard, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you could have this too. But that narrative, as more people share their stories, like we're realizing that that's not the truth of how things work.
Well, and I love that about the work hard. So I just actually had a phone call with somebody. She's with the Career Services Center on my campus. And I reached out to her because I'm really struggling to find a full-time job using my education. And what's really funny is I actually, I'm going to have to take my education off of my resume to get just like a normal job, maybe. I mean, I keep teasing that of some of the places that I may end up applying to. But in order to get some of the jobs, I have to take my master's degree and my PhD off. But if I do that, then what I show is this huge gap in my work history, because I spent 30 years as a stay-at-home mom. And it's funny because people will say, well, that's experience. But when it comes to applying for jobs, it's not experience. And I was explaining to her, so here's all of the things I've done in the past 5 years. They're really great. They're awesome, but they don't fit anywhere on a resume. They only fit on an academic CV. And if I'm going to try to get a job not in academia, then I show this huge gap that people are like, what have you been doing?
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how many people, my ex-husband included, who can't possibly understand why that's such a big deal. But for me, there's this huge gap that happened in my life. I don't have retirement. I don't have Social Security. I don't have work experience. I don't have insurance. Like there's all of these. I think you and I talked about this many times a year ago. I can't sign my own lease.
Right.
Because I have income that maybe that's come in, but not a work history. And it's just interesting. I just don't think unless you're, my daughter had this amazing phrase that she said to me a couple of days ago, and it was, nothing is personal until it becomes personal. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a very big truth for me when I got my divorce, is for 30 years, it wasn't personal that I didn't have retirement. I thought that I was, you know, I thought I was investing in this life where husband and I would always just be partnered. But it became really personal. Women's rights became really personal when I realized just how few I actually had in the year 2020. I still had so few rights.
Yeah. And a lot of that story resonates with me as well, as I went through my divorce process. And I know other people that I've talked to in the late bloomer community they're starting over in midlife and realizing now that in some ways, you know, the benefits and quote unquote privilege of being able to stay home to raise children is also a huge barrier when it comes to re-entering the job market. And I know in my own situation, I had people who say, well, you have a college degree, you had work experience, but I had been out of the traditional workforce for over a decade.
Yeah.
And again, also didn't have Social Security in that time. And I didn't have health insurance. And I didn't have enough employment history to even be able to refinance my house just under my own name.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things that I took for granted in being married and coupled, and then realized once I was on my own, wow, like, it's not that I'm not working. I'm working harder than I have ever worked in my life. but I still can't do the things that I could do just by being a married woman to somebody who had a corporate job.
Yeah, same, same. And you actually used a great phrase, and it was the took for granted. Because I think one of the reasons that the word privilege just really bites people the wrong way.
Oh, it does.
It does.
They get cranky.
Oh, I was on social media after the abortion laws were reversed. And that's one of the things we'll talk about. But I was so surprised. One of the women who was just adamant that there was never, ever, ever a time that abortion was okay. And she was explaining that she would do whatever it takes to take her kids to medical care, even if it meant two states away. She had a child who had some handicaps. And so she said, I spend hours every single week taking care of this baby, and I never regret it. I would never, ever have it any other way. I would never have wanted to abort this child. And there was somebody in her feed that said, do you recognize just how much privilege is in your argument? You have insurance. You have a car. You actually can cross state lines. Your spouse is employed, so you don't have to be. You have the luxury to be able to be stay at home. And like they pointed out all of these holes kind of in her story. And she responded back and she said, I take offense to the fact that you think I have privilege. I work for everything I have. That's not what privilege means. Privilege means I have access to resources, skills, tools, and support that other people do not have access to. If you have a parent, if you have extended family, if you have a church network, you have privileged access to things that people who do not live near family, people who do not have a religious community, people who do not have a job, you have privileged access. That's what the word privilege is. It's not you are bad, you are horrible, you don't deserve what you have. It is you have privileged access that you may be taking for granted that somebody else does not have access to.
Where this really stood out for me is actually when I was putting together a presentation on Equal Pay Day. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that at all. I had only vaguely heard of it and seen some statistics. But so March 14th in 2023 was Equal Pay Day. And basically that's I think they use a white man as the standard for what he would make an entire year. A woman has to work that entire year plus through March 14th to make the same. What was fascinating for me, so we have that pay gap that is just determined by gender. Again, not something you control. It's not like, well, I worked harder. It's just how you are. And then if you go into when they break it down by different races and ethnic groups, like Equal Pay Day for Asian American, Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders is April 5th. So they have to work that much longer. For the LGBTQIA+, it's June 15th. They have to work even longer. Black women have to work until July 27th. So a full year and more than a half to make the same amount in the same job as a white male. Moms, August 15th, Latinas, October 5th, and Native American women have to work almost double. So November 30th is when they equal the same pay amount. They're paid 57 cents. To the dollar of non-Hispanic white men.
So that's so interesting to me because I had never heard, and I didn't know we were going to talk about this, so I didn't actually pull up.
Me neither. I'm sorry.
No, that's awesome because the thing that I'm thinking is when I wrote that chapter for the textbook on women's issues across the generations, one of the things that came up was that there is also a wage gap between women who entered the workforce after college, straight from college, and women who took a pause and had children and then entered the workforce. Women who actually choose to stay home with their kids, they actually never can catch up the wage gap, even when compared to other women, even when compared to other demographics. So it's not even taking like the men-women gap out of it. It's saying if you stay home with your children, you automatically are at 60% less than the rest of the world, and you never get it. You never catch that up.
Right.
Because there's no way to make up that time. So
And these numbers are over the...
I would love that.
Yeah. And these are the numbers over the course of a year or a year and a half. Wow. So exponentiate that over the course of an adult career. And there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in earning potential difference. That's kind of a big deal.
You know, but so I've thought a lot about this because one of the reasons that I actually didn't work once my kids got older is it was totally pointless for me to work. At least it seemed like it. So at my ex-husband's income tax bracket, by the time I taught yoga, paid for the gas to get there, paid for the food that we ate because we ordered out every time I taught yoga because there was nobody else to make dinner. So we always ordered out. And then if there was anything else needed, like a babysitter or whatever, I made sometimes less than $3 an hour. It was just not worth it for me to be outside of the home when you did it from a mathematical perspective. But that's exactly, I've been thinking so much about it. What did I lose in my social skills in that 30 years? What did I lose in my confidence skills? What did I learn in just basic skills like computer skills and
technical skills and
advocating for myself skills, like all of the life skills that we develop by doing things. Mm-hmm. It's so much different, so much more critical even than financial, but we don't even think about all of that. I loved being a mom, but when I really think of the cost of my 30 years as a stay-at-home mom, I can't believe we actually encourage women to stay at home full time. My brain is actually blown by it.
Yeah.
It's so funny because like you said, it's a privileged narrative that is actually not a privilege.
Not if you have to leave that life that you expected your life track to be on. I think what it removes for women are options down the road. And I've had conversations with other women who say, well, I am in this marriage for the lifestyle now.
Yeah, I can't remember how many women I talk to who are like, how do you leave?
Right. And so, privilege is options as well. And I think sometimes we don't always see the limitation to options that other people have, either because of their race or their geography or how they present.
Well, and I love that because I think I shared that my daughter once had said that every time she brought it up at church, people would say, well, then don't get a divorce. But we hear that in the LGBTQ community also. Well, just don't dress that way. Mm-hmm. Just don't transition. Don't, like, if you're worried about the privilege, then just don't do that thing. Don't make that decision. But like you're saying, that takes away our options to live the life we want to live according to our own values. It's not, again, it's not about trying to make everybody fit into a box, which I think is what so many people, I think the more privilege you have, the more you think that maybe everybody should be able to fit into a box. And we just don't fit into boxes.
Right. And privilege isn't just about money. I think that's where a lot of people get really focused or job opportunities. Right now, I have a significant privilege within the LGBTQ plus community as a cis white middle-class woman who identifies as a lesbian. There is within the LGBTQ, there are people who are more safe and less safe, more accepted, less accepted. I am straight passing. So if I walk down the street, you know, unless I'm dressed in full rainbow gear or holding hands with Jen, which people just assume are sisters anyway, nobody knows. Whereas for a trans person, especially some of them earlier on in their transition, or they may not want to be passing or whatever. However, some people inherently are more visibly queer and that puts them at a greater risk. But then asking them to not present that way then takes away their right to happiness and integrity and truth and to be themselves. So yeah, it's challenging. I would like to talk more about microaggressions, if you don't mind,
let's talk
veering a little bit that way. Can you share your definition or experience with, like, what is a microaggression?
So microaggressions are any, they can be anything. They can be really, they're any kind of a behavior change, whether it's a verbal, physical, any kind of a change that might happen that lets somebody else know that an opinion has been cast, a value judgment has been made. So a microaggression can be anything from, honestly, walking down the street and passing a person of color and pulling your purse closer to your hip can be considered a microaggression. Even something as, to me, this feels more bigger than a microaggression, but let's say you have somebody walk into the room and you invite them to sit down at the table, let's say, and you say, now this table is diverse. Like, even that is a microaggression. Anything that you're doing that's calling out, whether to harm or to just make a statement. Microaggressions are not always intentional. Lots of people, when called out on microaggressions, claim that it was just sarcasm or it was meant as a joke or, you know, something. So I think that's what makes microaggressions something that's really difficult to understand, because I think it makes them difficult to understand because every person experiences them so different.
Yeah. I think microaggressions too, from my own experience, is what I experience the most, actually, from people of trying to appear supportive in some ways, but also it's almost like a tiny little jab, or it's like death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, it's the, I love you, but, or, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Yeah.
There's a fakeness to it. It's disingenuous. There's not love and positive intention behind it. And like you said, there are microaggressions where I don't know that people are necessarily intending to be hurtful, but there's almost kind of an ignorance or an insensitivity to it. And I'm not saying I'm immune to this either. There's, the more I learn and speak to people in other communities, it's, that's really what's also helping to educate me about, wow, okay, so from your perspective, hearing whatever, now I understand why that doesn't feel good, or that this has become a common phrase that should have never become a common phrase. And I need to unlearn this.
The one that you use just barely is actually such a good one. Love the sinner, hate the sin. That's one we see everywhere, right? Like, people say it all the time when they're justifying maybe why they're on this side of the LGBTQ laws, or they're on this side of the abortion laws, or they're on this side of the marriage laws. Their excuse for not really opening up to recognize that shared humanity, it to me, it goes back to that shared humanity. They're not really able to really tap into what that looks like, that we all have very different life experiences. Like, their rationale is, well, I love all people. I love like Christ loves,
but
and you're right. It's that, but therefore, nevertheless,
yeah.
And it came to pass, God will kill all people who are just like you.
Oh, thank you. I feel the love. I feel it.
I so feel it. Totally. Deeply. Yeah. Well, and that kind of, to me, that's one of the things that maybe would have been a great way to start. But privilege really does lay on a spectrum, just like everything else.
Sure.
Like you said, it's not always about money. It's not always about white middle-class men. But it is about, I think all of us have a responsibility to check where we lie on the privilege spectrum at any given place. Like you said, you have some privilege maybe in the LGBTQ world. I have some privilege in some spaces that I have quite a bit of privilege. But then if you put me in another space, I have very, very little privilege. Mm-hmm. And so it's just important to recognize where you are at any given moment. It's not about making people right or wrong. It's about making sure that you are not directly a barrier to somebody else's access to a happy life, to a joyful life, to choice in life.
Sure. And that it's okay if it doesn't feel good to you to dive into what your own privilege is. I understand that you're working hard and life is hard. You know, I think sometimes we like to paint a picture of what the others are like and why we deserve what we have. But until you really meet the people and not even find out surface level what their life is like, but how generationally has this impacted where they are today?
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, this is why education is so important, and having these discussions and reading people's stories or hearing people's stories. And that's something that I hope we all continue to fight for across the country, is that we just have access to hear people's stories.
Well, and I love that, because it is funny, because I love education. I do.
I noticed.
I have a little bit of it in my life. But it is the stories. It's like you can sit me in a room for 2 semesters to teach about diversity, equity, and inclusion. But it's when I sit with somebody and I hear their story, and I love the way Brené Brown talks about it, because she says, not only do we have to be heard and seen, we have to be believed. Mm. So again, I'll go back to my ex-husband before we got a divorce. It did not matter how many times I told my story, how many times I begged to be seen, unless he believed what my experience was, he just could not actually put himself in a position to help me make different decisions, to make different choices, to realign our family in a way that set me up for as much success as him. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is it's not just hearing somebody's stories. It's not just seeing the struggles that they've overcome or the challenges that they have to overcome, but it's actually believing it. I am convinced that when we believe somebody else's story, that we actually can come in with love. Actually, I'm just going to say with love, because we don't always need solutions. We don't always need somebody to solve our problems for us or to help us make decisions. What we need to know is we're just not alone in the gig.
Mm-hmm. But we need some solutions too.
We do.
We don't always have to.
I say that is because so often, again, people with privilege want to hear your story, see you, and then come in and say, well, why don't you just work harder? Or why don't you hire somebody to walk your dogs? Like, that was my little situation. But we don't always need that. It's the hear, see, believe.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Any other takeaways for folks today, or just recognize your privilege, check your privilege?
I think recognize your privilege, check your privilege. And, you know, one of the things that you and I talked about was another story from my daughter that her and I had talked a little bit about when she was first making her transition out of church activity. She had a lot of people that would reach out privately with those microaggressions.
Yeah.
Let her know that she was losing her soul, that she was going to go to hell. If she stopped paying her tithing, she was going to burn in hell. All of these things, that the one that my kids always bring this one up, which is so ridiculous, but one of the common lessons in our church is that nobody wants a licked cupcake. So if you've had Yeah, it's a lesson that our young girls get, by the way, every year. But so she would have people say, nobody wants a licked cupcake. And the thing that we were talking about, she said, but what was really funny is then 5 years later, some of these same exact people reached out and said, hey, I'm having questions. I'm leaving the church. Do you have any advice? And she said it was really, really hard for her to want to give advice. And that was actually her phrase, that was when she came up with that thing. It's that nothing feels personal until it becomes personal. And she had just told all of them, be really careful, because those opinions that you cast at me are the same opinions of the people who are around you. So you will be hearing those now that you're leaving the church, because we only form our opinions based on the people that we spend our time with. So I think that that's just another, for me, a cautionary tale. There's a lot of places where I did not recognize my own privilege until I was in a situation where it became obvious that I may have contributed to a lot of pain for my children, for people in my community, just because I didn't recognize that privilege.
So many good words you just said. And I my brain is still trying to get over the fact that we are blaming the cupcake instead of the person who's going around licking all the cupcakes and stopping them. Okay, anyway, that's has nothing to do with privilege. That is just, this is why I wouldn't have done well in religion. Okay. That's for another episode.
That is.
Yeah. But no, that's a great story to share. And what a wise takeaway from her. And yeah, it is the cautionary tale of that this, and again, I think we see this a lot with the LGBTQ, where people have a lot of thoughts and opinions and emotions because it doesn't touch their lives yet.
Yeah.
And then when it does, they are receiving a lot of who they've surrounded themselves with and what they've put out there. And it's hard. And then that's how people lose their safety nets of support.
And I know we're going a little bit long, but even just that whole, I don't know if you saw all of the hubbub about Target. They lost $9 billion in sales in 1 week. Yep. Because of the backlash of the tucking swimming suits.
For adults, just to clarify, it's only for adults.
Yes. And my brain can only imagine what kind of people were part of that backlash. And it does make me sad because, again, statistically, you and I have talked about this so many times. The chance to have made a $9 billion dent in Target's revenue for a week. Do you know how many people that would have had to have been? How many allowed that voice would have had to have been? And statistically, again, 40% of those voices know someone in their first degree of relationships that will come out in the next 5 years. Hmm. It just, and who did it hurt to have those swimming suits available? I can't think of anybody that it hurt, but I can think of, in my world, I can think of seven people that it helped. Seven first degree relationships that it helped. And I don't think I'm that weird. I don't think that I'm that far off the normal white heterosexual middle class woman.
Yeah.
I'm divorced, which is actually not that weird anymore. After 2020, there's 60% of us.
Woo! Yeah. But I am out of all the words on the Target situation, but I agree. It just now is a really big time for everyone to examine their own privilege. And the people who don't have as much privilege need those of us who do to show up more than ever with love and support and safety to just allow them to exist.
And a willingness to believe it.
Yeah. Believe. Ted Lasso.
Believe. Believe. All right, my dear. You're my awesomest friend in the land.
Back at ya.
Hey, everybody. Have a great week. And we will be back next week with uncertainty trauma, which is also a big one.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, see you later.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveintheque@gmail.com. Until next time, Queue Crew.